Two more days to Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Two more days to Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
You are my density. You are my density.
And of course, that was the jingle for the commercial in 1982's Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Flashing back to last week's episode with the Donovan song, which is the non-Michael Myers-related segment of the Halloween movies, and as previously mentioned, a pretty underrated, worthwhile movie to watch, with the always awesome Tom Atkins in leading man mode. He uncovers a plot by a deranged mask maker who's trying to kill millions of children on Halloween using some crazy-ass ritual and some triggering device in a TV commercial. Tom Atkins has charisma, charm. The movie is pretty dark visually and thematically, but it's totally fun. And a great double feature would be, yes, the previously mentioned, and just one of my favorites, 1986 Night of the Creeps, the horror sci-fi comedy with Jason Lively, a.k.a. Rusty Griswold from 1985's European Vacation, the hot Jill Whitlow, and a great Steve Marshall, who plays Jason Lively's wise-ass college roommate. Alien parasites are infecting a university campus on Pledge Week, and Tom Atkins is the jaded, world-weary detective investigating the incident. Fred Decker directed, and man, what a great film. You may also enjoy Fred Decker's Monster Squad from 1987, kind of a Spielberg-y vibe movie with a group of 12-year-olds who come across a plan by Count Dracula and a group of monsters to take over their hometown. The kind of imposing, spooky-looking Tom Noonan, a.k.a. the Tooth Fairy from Michael Mann's 1986 Manhunter, plays Frankenstein. And the Monster Squad was written by Fred Decker and, get this, Shane Black, the absolute master screenwriter. And the Monster Squad is just a fun time. It'll appeal to kids and adults as well. It's kind of Goonies-ish. It's so 1980s and underrated as hell. Please watch it. And yes, Halloween is coming up. Do you have any fun plans? I'm actually going to be working at the psych hospital on Halloween, which is kind of appropriate, I suppose. For some unfortunate people, every day is Halloween, hearing voices, seeing things, but we do our best to help them. But anyway, sit back, relax, get some popcorn, and let's start talking about some movies. And actually, what the hell, let's just start with 1991's Popcorn, directed by Mark Harrier with the great and foxy Jill Sholin, the odd but endearing Tom Villard, and Dee Wallace Stone, forever imprinted in my brain as the mom in 1982's Steven Spielberg's massive E.T., the extraterrestrial, also with Henry Thomas as Elliot. And Henry Thomas, yes, as mentioned before, is in 1990's Psycho 4, The Beginning. He plays the young Norman Bates. Try and track that one down. It's interesting. And Psycho 2 is just flat out great with twists, awesome kills, and you kind of weirdly root for Norman Bates, which is a testament to Anthony Perkins' performance. Okay, back to Popcorn, which had the tagline, buy a bag, go home in a box. Popcorn is a fun movie about movie geeks putting on a horror movie marathon while a madman is slowly killing the movie geeks. Some of the kills are goofy, it's fun, but it's got a likable cast. It drags in moments, but it's got a great heart, and it's kind of made for horror movie lovers. Tom Villard is one of the key characters. He was kind of an oddball actor from the 1980s. He died young of AIDS-related pneumonia, and he was on this weird-ass TV show called We Got It Made. It was on for like 2 seasons. It was kind of a sexist, stupid show about 2 bachelors in New York City who hire Mickey, played by the actress Terry Copley, to be their housekeeper. And now Terry Copley was in that era where I was like starting to slowly develop sexual attraction to women, and man, at the time, she did it for me. The show got kind of lousy ratings. It didn't last long. It honestly wasn't that good. But for me, at that time, I totally loved it and looked forward to like new episodes. So anyway, rest in peace, Tom Villard. All right, well, a brand new thriller, kind of horror-ish, just hit Netflix. It's called Don't Move, with Kelsey Aspiel and the often employed by Ryan Murphy, Finn Wittrock. I like how his name is fun to say, Finn Wittrock. He joins my list of fun names to say, like one of my other favorite actors, Boyd Holbrook. Anyway, it's decent. It's not great. It's short, but it's worth watching. There's some like major lapses of logic in the film. It's more an expanded short film, really. But it does come together in the end, and it's about a grieving woman, a mom who's in the woods, don't ask, and she gets injected with some kind of paralytic agent by Finn Wittrock. He's kind of a serial killer type. It does have an effective ending line. It's shot fairly well, and it's mindless viewing, worth a watch. The female lead, Kelsey Aspiel, I guess is on Yellowstone, a TV show I refuse to watch. I mean, I don't watch many series these days. Sugar season 2, anyone? I'm on board with that, but I doubt that's happening. But yeah, there's like 20 Yellowstone spin-offs. Yellowstone 2, Electric Boogaloo. Yellowstone 3, this time it's personal. Yellowstone 4, the final chapter, and so on. And in a Coppola-like fashion, Yellowstone's Kevin Costner recently kind of went balls to the wall with his big-budget bomb, Horizon, an American saga. And the horizon looks grim for any potential sequels to that one, although Part 2 is in the can and Part 3 is currently filming. But yeah, it's not looking good for the financial futures of those films. But kudos to Costner for doing something he feels passionate about, even if it bombed. And as we just mentioned, Don't Move. If you want to see a laughably bad horror movie with Don't in the title, well then see Don't Blink from 2014 with Brian Austin Green. My buddy Hornbeck and I saw it, and we laughed as much as if it had been like a comedy. I recently rewatched the fun horror comedy Idle Hands from 1999, directed by the interestingly named Rodman Flinder. He kind of sounds like a Billy Mays infomercial product. Sick and tired of not being able to find your keys? Then get the Rodman Flinder. It finds anything. It's portable, fashionable, and you can also put your tools on it. But yeah, Idle Hands is entertaining as shit. Well cast, fun. The soon-to-become drug addict for a while, Devon Sawa, stars as Anton, whose right hand gets possessed by a demonic force. He kills his two stoner buddies, hilariously played by Seth Green and Eldon Henson. They come back from the dead to, like, hang with him, and he has to figure out how to stop his evil appendage, all the while trying to woo the hot neighbor, played by Jessica Alba. Vivica A. Fox plays a demon hunter, and he of the worthy nose, Jack Noseworthy, plays a local tough guy metalhead. He's also in the great Kurt Russell thriller Breakdown from 1997, a true must-see. But yeah, Idle Hands is goofy. It's got some funny scenes. It's got a great energy, some gore, and it's just a good time. So don't idle, okay? And watch it. And hey, have you seen 1994's Cemetery Man with the classy, charismatic as shit Rupert Everett playing a cemetery caretaker? Him and his sidekick are dealing with the little problem of the in the graveyard of the dead coming back to life. Rupert Everett falls in love, and dude, this movie is awesome. I think I saw it at a film festival. It's scary, funny, violent, well shot, and well directed by an Italian master, Michele Soavi. Kind of a protege of Dario Argento, Soavi also directed the memorable Stage Fright from 1987, set during a rehearsal for a play about a serial killer, and actual killings start happening. Cemetery Man is an underrated, somewhat underseen film. It's just a great mix of like zombies and romance. And its original title is also awesome, De la Morte, De la More, which translates into something involving love and death. You looking for something cheesy for Halloween? Well, how about 2001's Valentine, directed by Jamie, I'm not shooting blanks, with David Boreanaz, I don't know how to say his name, he of the TV show Angel and Bones, the beautiful Denise Richards, the somewhat disliked Catherine Hegel, and Jessica Capshaw. It's Valentine's Day, and someone is killing some somewhat awful girls. There's like a backstory about a bullied outcast student from years ago who ended up in a mental institution. It got kind of critically panned, but I enjoyed it. It's got some clever kills, some comedy, a great cast, and a cool ending. We all love a good revenge story, don't we? And while it's not really horror per se, a completely under the radar, pretty devastatingly grim film is 2010's Red, White, and Blue, directed by Simon Rumley. Amanda Fuller plays a troubled young woman who's quite promiscuous. She meets an equally troubled ex-military dude played by a great Noah Taylor. There's also some kind of asshole wannabe rock star thrown in the mix. It's a slow burn, but man, it's tragic and it left me gutted. It leads to such an epic and graphic scene of revenge that it's almost shocking. It's unsettling as hell, but there's just such a sense of human desperation and loneliness to it. And you really wish the people in the movie could have a happy ending. But man, oh man, what an affecting movie. It's one of those like the French film Frontiers from 2007 you'll probably never want to watch again. But if you're up for it, Red, White, and Blue is worth watching, though such a downer, my God. Okay, let's turn to a serious little gem from 1986. It's April Fool's Day. Just kidding. No, wait, I'm serious. It's April Fool's Day. A great, smart, kind of meta-ish horror film. And I hate the word meta, sorry. Let's say self-referential instead, okay? But anyway, it predates the also meta-ish Scream by a decade. Oh, and why do omelets love April Fools? Well, they enjoy practical yolks. But seriously, man, April Fool's Day is great. A bunch of college students go to a secluded island at the behest of their wealthy classmate. She's a legendary practical joker, but people start ending up dead. It's directed by Fred Walton, who also directed 1979's When a Stranger Calls, starring Carol Kane as a babysitter with the unforgettable line to her on the phone, "Have you checked the children?" April Fool's Day has humor and twists up till the very end, in fact, at the very end. And it stars a really good Deborah Foreman as the rich and fabulously named Muffy St. John. And Deborah Foreman's breakout role was Martha Coolidge's time capsule from 1983, Valley Girl, with Nicolas Cage as a punker named Randy. But the movie Valley Girl doesn't have Frank Zappa's 1982 song, Valley Girl, which featured vocals from his then 14-year-old daughter, Moon Zappa. I once was hiking in like Hollywood or something, and I ran across Moon Zappa. She had like a cool energy about her, like a cool vibe. But yeah, April Fool's Day is some cleverly done shit, kind of blurring the line between reality and illusion at times, and it's a step up from your average slasher whodunit of that era. So go watch it, goddammit. And speaking of special days, you say it's your birthday? Well, happy birthday to you. How about 1981's Happy Birthday to Me? Directed by the prolific, underrated director J. Lee Thompson, who directed the original Cape Fear from 1962, The Guns of Navarone from 1961, and a shit ton of cheesy but great Charles Bronson Golden Globus movies. Happy Birthday to Me had a classic poster with some guy with his mouth wide open and a shish kebab entering his mouth with the tagline, "John will never eat shish kebab again." It's also got the kind of often classic storyline of a rejected kid possibly getting revenge on her evil schoolmates years later. Melissa Sue Anderson, of TV's Little House on the Prairie fame, more on that in a bit, plays our lead hero slash villain, and Glenn Ford is also in the movie. He's kind of sleepwalking through the role, but oh well. It's kind of a melodramatic story. It drags at times, but it's got some creative kills, and it's just got one of those ridiculous twist endings that you just gotta see. And here's a phrase I never thought I would necessarily say on this podcast. Speaking of Little House on the Prairie, that TV show had the actor with the most convoluted last name ever, Matthew Labyorteau. I have no idea how to say it. Labyorteaux. What in the fuck? Anyway, he starred in Wes Craven's 1986's Deadly Friend, kind of a sci-fi horror film that completely broke my heart at the time. It had my imaginary girlfriend at the time, Christy Swanson, and Matthew Labor, whatever. Let's just call him Matthew. He's kind of a nerdy guy who becomes friends with Samantha. They begin a little innocent romance, and Samantha's abusive alcoholic father pushes her down the stairs. She's on life support, and Matthew decides he'll use his computer skills and a microchip to wake her up. And she does wake up, but unfortunately, she doesn't really resemble the girl that he knew, and she becomes a robotic killing machine. The movie is kind of a mess. Supposedly, Craven's original version was more of a teenage romance, so the studio wanted a bunch of gory elements, and those were put into the film. So yeah, it's not perfect, but when I saw it, I think just the heartbreak of the guy finally finding a girl he liked and then her getting killed, it just kind of tore me up. But hey, we don't go to horror movies for happy endings, do we? And if you do figure out where we go for happy endings, let me know, okay? Have you been craving some Craven? Well, then let's talk some more about Wes Craven. Okay, I kind of like Wes Craven's 1989 film Shocker with the X-Files' Mitch Pileggi as a killer who gets executed, but get this, he makes a deal with the devil and he comes back as kind of like evil electricity. Yes, a ridiculous plot. Peter Berg, the kind of dud actor, plays a detective. It's also got A Nightmare on Elm Street's Heather Langenkamp and some oddball cameos, including Timothy Leary and the TV newscaster John Tesh. It's a corny, enjoyable B-movie. Some of the effects suck, but it's fun to watch. Okay, the werewolf film Cursed from 2005, written by the kind of awesome Kevin Williamson. It's a mess, but it's totally worth watching. It's another Craven film where he didn't get the final cut, and the studio probably fucked with the film too much. And who produced it? Well, the Slime Brothers themselves, Bob and Harvey Weinstein. The movie is a fun mess, though, with some ridiculous werewolf transformations and bad CGI. But it's got some great actors and dialogue with Christina Ricci and Jesse Eisenberg, who I normally don't like. They come across a werewolf one night, and trouble ensues. It's set in Los Angeles. Judy Greer has a great part as a publicist and possible werewolf. The film also has Joshua Jackson as an asshole who runs a wax museum in Los Angeles. And the film also has some ridiculous cameos from Craig Kilborn, the TV host, and Happy Days' Chachi himself, Scott Baio. Hey, did you ever see the 1982 sex comedy Zapped with Scott Baio and, get this, Willie Ames? Well, don't see it. It's terrible. Judy Greer has a great line where she's like brawling with someone and they mention it not being fair. And so Judy Greer says, "A fair fight? This is Hollywood." I recently saw Judy Greer in some commercials on TV playing a therapist, and all I could say was, "Oh, Judy, Judy, Judy," which was the famous misquote from Cary Grant. But anyway, Cursed probably was a Cursed production, and the end result isn't flawless, but I found it enjoyably fun, and hey, you might too. And I always kind of thought My Soul to Take from 2010, directed by Wes Craven, was underrated. It's not really, doesn't really have a well-known cast, although John Magaro has developed into quite a talented and unique actor, for sure. It's a bit convoluted, but the legend is that a serial killer has vowed to come back and kill the 7 children born on the night he died. It's set in the town of Riverton, and these kids are, wait for it, the Riverton 7. I don't know, man. It's a fun slasher with a great twist, and the character Fang is well played by the actress Emily Mead. She does a great job. Again, not a perfect film, but it was critically panned, and maybe I'm just nuts, but goddammit, I like it. And as a kid, I was always freaked out by the prayer, "Now I lay me down to sleep," with the line, "If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take." And it's like, I'm 6 years old at the time. Why am I worrying about death? Jesus. Okay, so watch some of those movies if you haven't. Let me know what you think. Hope you have fun. And Halloween, ah, the time of trick-or-treating. Man, I used to love going trick-or-treating in the quiet streets of Pleasant Hill when I was a kid. And you know what I appreciate now is when people that would answer their door and they would fucking go with it. They would be like energetic or act scared by our costumes. And they would connect with us dumbass kids and show us some personality and try to make it a fun night for us. And just gorging on candy as we went from house to house. And there's always that those couple people that would be like, "Okay, kids, here are some healthy snacks." And even as a tiny little kid, I would be like, "Oh, come on, motherfucker. It's Halloween. Get with the program." And the urban myth of like razor blades and shit and candies would always add a little thrill to the whole event. But it was a different time. Kids were way more innocent back then, and people were more interesting, I think. I mean, do kids even trick-or-treat anymore? I lived in Los Angeles for 20 years, complete apartment life, and I would never see kids trick-or-treating. I mean, I'm sure they still trick-or-treat in some towns, but people are so isolated in their homes, so distracted, so indifferent, so kind of boring that I bet you most people probably act like they aren't even home anymore when kids do knock on the door. And who the fuck knows anymore with fentanyl and other drugs? It's gotten to the point almost where I don't even know if you can accept anything from a stranger at all anymore. Kids are growing up way too fast with phones and porn and shit, and man, something's been lost in the process. Simply being a dumbass kid back in the day with no cell phone, no computer, and none of that shit, man, it was a blast. And hopefully kids do have some semblance of an innocent, fun time growing up these days, but it seems harder and harder, I think. And speaking of spooky-ass shit when I was a kid, let me close with a brief story and then a song and then lights out. So when I was younger, I would see people walking or near purple cars. And my friends would be like, "Oh, it's one of the purple people." I guess they lived in purple houses and they would drive around in purple limousines. This was in Northern California. And I had no idea what the fuck they were, but they seemed creepy as hell. And it almost sounds like something from a movie. "Hey, it's one of the purple people." And I later found out these guys were all members of the Morehouse community based in Lafayette, which wasn't too far from where I grew up. And I guess it was kind of like a hedonistic lifestyle, kind of like if the world is good, then more can only mean better. It was kind of focused on pleasure and sensuality and God damn it, why didn't someone tell me about this back then? I would have moved right in. Just kidding. And while it has been described as a kind of sex cult, and it may seem a little weird to me, from what I've read, the people in the community seem to get along okay, and they're still around. So hey, who am I to judge? But I do have to say I would have preferred the concept of some like evil group of murderers or something, at least when I was a kid, because that's what I pictured when I heard about these purple people. But it turns out they were just some hippie types. Yes, maybe weird in a way, but just trying to have some fun and get laid. All right, well, we'll wrap this up with a kind of creepy song by the literate, smartest shit band Pulp, led by Jarvis Cocker. He's kind of a legend, super intelligent. Their song Underwear just has a kind of a weird vibe. It's from the album Different Class from 1995. It's catchy, a little dark. It's well done stuff, though. It's maybe told from the perspective of a guy who has a crush on a girl, yet she's about to sleep with someone else, and now maybe she's having second thoughts. It has a somewhat cinematic element to the lyrics and kind of sets an eerie scene. So here's some of that song. And anyway, hey, enjoy your Halloween and think of me on that day. I'll be working a 12-hour shift in the psych hospital, goddammit. Why don't you shut the door and close the curtains? 'Cause you're not going anywhere. He's coming up the stairs, and in a moment he'll want to see your underwear. I couldn't stop it now, there's no way to get out. He's standing far too near, how the hell did you get here? Semi-naked in somebody else's room, I'd give my whole life to see it. Just you stood there, only in your underwear.